Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Can poetry become a bridge between cultures, religions, and centuries? On this episode of This Week in America, acclaimed poet, translator, and professor emeritus Martin Bidney explores the spiritual and literary traditions that inspired three remarkable books. Martin has pioneered an original literary form he calls Verse Translation with Interview. That's VTI, creating poetic conversations with some of history's greatest writers and spiritual thinkers. With more than 60 published books and over 150 scholarly articles and decades of teaching literature, Martin Bidney offers an inspiring perspective on the enduring power of poetry to unite people across cultures and generations. It's our privilege to welcome back to This Week in America, literary scholar and professor emeritus Martin Bidney, back with us on This Week in America. Martin, welcome back to the program. Always a pleasure. Looking forward to our conversation.
Thank you, Rick.
I gave a little bit of that background there. I'm still fascinated by the VTIs that you do. What got you started on your innovative project of creating VTIs, or verse translation interviews, books of poetry, writing dialogues between you and whatever poet you were translating? Where did that come from? How did that begin for you?
It happened by accident, actually. I had gone to Stanford University for my sabbatical year instead of I was supposed to be a professor, but I decided to go right back to school and learn a new subject, which was German literature, because I'd been writing and teaching about British romantics, and I wanted to learn more about romanticism and the greatest of all the romantics, although people fight about the label, but we won't worry about that, was probably Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, the author of Faust. But what a lot of people don't realize is that when Goethe, this is in an era of the Napoleonic Wars, was having trouble with, what do we call it, writer's block on Faust. It took him 60 years to write, you know, but this was a particularly problematic time. This was about 1814. The Napoleonic Wars were driving everybody crazy. History seemed to be nothing but endless confusion. You didn't know who was the freedom fighter and who was the emperor. But in any case, Goethe wanted and needed distraction from worrying about what Faust was going to do next. And it just so happened that in 1814, a tremendously important event for European cultural history occurred, and that is the translation of the complete poetry of medieval poet Hafiz for the very first time into any modern European language, and that language was German, and Goethe snapped up a copy of the poetry of Hafiz, and he discovered that it was such a break from his worries about politics and history that he called the man, this medieval Persian pub poet, I have to say. Medieval Persian pub poet Hafiz became so intimately adopted as a friend by Goethe that he called him his twin brother. He called him his twin brother, and in fact, what he decided to do is write a reply to the book, and the book was called West East Divan, and I have translated it. I don't know if you can see this.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes. Well, it's called, in my version, West East Divan. Divan is just Persian for a collection or anthology. We think of it as a sofa, but originally it was the assemblage of people sitting on the sofa. So West East Divan, the poems with notes and essays. I'm the first person that ever translated that into English. It's a really amazing sketch of Middle Eastern poetic history. I was assisted by a person who, Peter Anton von Arnim, but I really had to do an awful lot of a long, detailed work on it. Anyway, I did the notes and essays, but then I got interested in the poems themselves, Goethe's intercultural dialogues, because he was writing in the style of this medieval Persian pub poet. And let me just pause here for a minute to say that if you're worried about the phrasing there, medieval Persian pub poet, I thought Persia is Islam, and how does that go together with pubs? And the answer to that is Islam is different in different countries. If you're in a dry country like Egypt or Arabia, a stern interpretation of the Quran's remarks on wine can be used. But in Persia, a liberal interpretation was called for because the soil is so rich, it begs to be made into vineyards. And that was done, you may be sure. So here's a Hafiz, and he's so different from anything that Goethe had encountered. This man has come to be regarded as next thing to a saint because he's such a fine singer, but at the same time, he's a very troubled human being. I would call him an alcoholic. Mostly he writes about the taverns. He's very angry when they're not open by 11 in the morning. I mean, what kind of a tavern is it that isn't open at 11 in the morning?
Yes.
So there you have one problem, and then he goes to the tavern mostly because his the love objects are men, and it's the men that go to the tavern. So he is really a gay alcoholic, but he writes love poems that he loves to write, and that's because they're so musical and sweet. He says, "Who cares what happens to me? My love poems are sung as far away as China." And as a matter of fact, Persia had considerable trade traffic with China. And it's quite possible that he's right in making that claim. So anyway, here's Goethe, and he's adopting his twin brother, Hafiz. And I decided I wouldn't just translate the scholarly essay. I would translate the entire book. So I sat down and I began with 240 poems. But then something funny happened to me. It's really interesting to hear about because it changed my life. Basically, here's what happened. I realized that I was having a great time translating, but after a while, a strange thing happened. It seemed as if there wasn't enough air to breathe in the room. Goethe was taking all the air. All I was doing was translating him all the time, and I felt, I can't stand this. I want to write. And so I started to write replies. I would write replies to him, often in the forms that he was teaching me as the translator. And it turns out that for his 240 poems, I not only wrote a reply to each of them, but sometimes I'd write two or three or four or five or six or seven replies. So there's a lot more of me in the book than there is even of Goethe. But you notice that in the title, I don't boast about that. I didn't want to shock people by saying, here are two rival divans or collections. I didn't dare say that. So I just played the role of a commentator, and that's all I called myself at the time. Later, I became bolder, as you see, and from the other books where I make it quite clear that my aim is dialogue. Anyway, it was wonderful to do. Oh, and I want to tell you, I got to at least read you a poem, right, Dope?
Please.
Here's a poem that really hooked me. I'll just take the glasses off. You, in a thousand forms yourself may hide, yet, oh, beloved, I acknowledge you. Covered with magic veil, you may abide, all present one, yet I acknowledge you. In young, pure striving of the cypress trees, all beauteous grown, straight I acknowledge you. When the pure channel waters flow with ease, then all alluring, I acknowledge you. When climbing high the water jet outspreads, all playful, gladly I acknowledge you. When clouds reshaping raise their heaven heads, all manifold, there I acknowledge you. On veil beflowered with meadow tapestry, all color starry, I acknowledge you. When myriad grasping ivy arms I see, oh, all surrounding, I acknowledge you. When morning kindles on the hills and downs, all clear, serene, I greetings send to you. And when above the heaven softly rounds, all heart expanding, I am breathing you. What I with outer sense and inner know, you all instructive, I but know through you. And when through Allah's 100 names I go, from every one, An echo name for you.
That was so powerful. I love when you read that and your enthusiasm and your passion in telling the story in poetic form. Thank you for doing that. I'm going to ask you to do that more times as we go through our conversation today. Our guest is Martin Bidney, B-I-D-N-E-Y. You'll find information on all of his books. I mentioned over 60 books, a number of articles written at his website, martinbidney, BIDNEY.org. Click on a website, thisweekinamerica.us. Back with us for a third time, and always a pleasure to have Martin back with us. What lyrical achievement in Goethe's East-West Persian-German book excited you the most? What got you the most excited?
Well, this poem is a good example, and maybe its best example, of what excites me in that book, because it's called West East Divan, and he plays the role of a Persian pub poet. He pretends to be one, and he adopts all kinds of Persian ways of speaking as he understands them, and he tries to become a part of the Persian pub culture. But in this poem, he also shows that he has been doing other research. He's been reading the mystical writers, the Sufis. You perhaps have heard of Sufism. It's Islamic-derived mysticism, but it incorporates Hinduism and Christianity and many influences. It tries to transcend them all. Rumi, the great Sufi poet, is famous for saying, God isn't a Muslim. Anyway, so Goethe was, you know how I know that he was influenced by Sufi poetry? Because that poem is almost a kind of shocking thing to hear. It shocked me because all the time, whom did you think he was talking to? It sounded like it was God, didn't it?
Yes.
It sounded like it was God. Yes. And then in the last two lines, all of a sudden we learn he's talking to his girlfriend. Now, that is very interesting, because in Sufi poetry, they often make confusions like that. In fact, they encourage it, because it's not a confusion. Deep down, if you're in deeply in love, heart and soul, with one of God's creatures, you are practicing and experiencing and receiving the love of God.
Interesting. So much behind the poetry, the names that we've heard and referenced over the course of so many years. And Martin Bidney is bringing it alive once again on our program today. Why is Ibn Arabi important as a source for poetry? Where did that come from?
Oh, that's my next book. Here it is.
Ah, there we go.
Yes, it's God the All-Imaginer, Wisdom of Sufi Master Ibn Arabi in 99 Modern Sonnets. Ibn Arabi is a man who lived in the 1200s. He's a little early, 1100s and 1200s. He precedes Dante, and that's important, as I'll explain in a minute. But Ibn Arabi is basically the most influential Sufi commentator on the Quran that ever was. And he's so imaginative in his interpretations that you just can hardly take it all in. He's such a great imaginer. Actually, you might say that he is a kind of prose counterpart to Rumi, except that he's also a kind of poet on his own. He wrote a famous little six-liner poem, which is endlessly quoted, where he says, I get on my horse, whose name is Love, and I say, take me where you want. Okay, so that's the idea. And
yes.
Ibn Arabi interprets in a way that's almost like scripture writing. He'll take an object that he's interested in for its symbolic properties, and he will explain what it means to him, and he often goes way beyond anything that the Quran has to say about it, and that's why he's such an original creative artist. And what I've done for today, if you like, is I've selected a couple of poems where we focus on what he does with two symbols, the cup and the knot. Okay,
perfect.
So let's start with Ibn Arabi tells of the cup. Junaid said, water will the cup's own color take. The essence of the real cannot be named or known. It has to be made manifest. I gladly drink what my preparedness had made me thirsty for. My character and nature and a use I make of what has happened, what I'm given, how I've grown, will shape the cup that holds what I suppose I think. Yet water into endless vessel kinds he'll pour, that is God. Manat, Alat, and Al-Uzzah, the females three, who each had been considered once a deity, local goddesses he's talking about, were thus a triple apparition of the real. The face of God is everywhere, but he has made all things in measure, in the hues of names arrayed. From colored cup we drink what we in spirit feel. You know what that means? It means that religions are cups or glasses or containers,
okay,
for the water of spirit. And it's very smart not to confuse the cup with the water. So if you had these three local goddesses, and they are considered nowadays quite sinful to worship, he says, back in that time, it seemed the natural thing. That was the level of enlightenment they had reached. And we're all at one level of enlightenment or another, and we all keep moving forward, and we all have a chance to keep doing that, because water of spirit can come in any sort of cup shape.
Fascinating. I mean, it really is, and so well read and presented. It's just such a pleasure to have you on the program, and I forget that I'm supposed to talk to you. I'm just sitting back enjoying listening to you in your recitation during the program. If you just joined us, it's Martin Bidney, Bidney. We talk about three of his books today, and I'll give you that information. We have it on our screen. The book cover's on the screen as well. Over 60, you'll find him at his website, Martin Bidney, Bidney.org. You're going to read another one about the knot. Do you want to read that one next?
Yeah, the knot.
Yes.
Ibn Arabi tells of the knot. Beliefs are knots. Can tie you up or down. Isn't that interesting in English? Tied up and tied down are both pretty bad.
Yes.
And yet the intricacy of a knot we may admire. The beauty of its making, laud, that is praise. The Sufi tries each one, for all are of the real. Once again, the cups, lot of cups, lots of knots. Our minds are wide, and may all things include, save hidden being, that is the innermost nature of the ultimate. We know nothing whatsoever about that, but we know the names of God, which are the shapes and forms that God takes, whatever the sort of God being may be, in the works of the creation. Our minds are wide, and may all things include, save hidden being. Let us tie the knots and learn their making. 'Twill require undoing each before we try the next. The eyes all beauties cannot view together will abide with each belief, assume it, feel it, live it, and the range of emblems value that with bounteous hand the real, the hidden being, glad will grant, but still remain unbound, unlimited by any. We can nothing but belief that is conditioned see. The tying and unbinding many lives would fill. The moral of that story is, since beliefs, knots are beliefs, and they can tie you up and tie you down if you get too attached to them, you should learn how to untie those knots. And that means going through a series of beliefs. I actually have taken that pretty literally. I was brought up Jewish, and then I wrote a book called Blake and Goethe, which is about two mystical visionaries who had Christian backgrounds. And in the last 23 years, I've done an intensive study of Islam. So I never could be content with one religion. I have to have lots and lots of them.
Fascinating. Our guest is Martin Bidney, reading some of the poetry that you'll find in the three books we're talking about today. And again, I'll give you information on those as we go through the program, and all of his books available at his website. Tell me a little bit about Ibn Arabi's trip to interview the 27 saints and sages in heaven, and how does Father Abraham express those insights from the parables of the cup and knot?
Oh, I would be delighted to talk about that. Ibn Arabi is an astonishing human being because he took a trip, nothing less than a tour of heaven, and he visited in all the different heavenly spheres where we're thought to dwell, all the saints and sages of Islamic tradition, and he interviewed them, and he writes what they said to him, and they wrote, they have tons of things to say to him, and they're all fascinating. I had to choose very carefully. I'm going to give you only one sample. I'm going to give you the sample of Abraham. Abraham, here's his name in Arabic.
Okay.
That's my friend Shahid Alam's calligraphy. I will tell you here, I'll just read my poem about Ibn Arabi tells of Abraham, and then I'll tell you a little more about Abraham in Islam, because I think Abraham is one of the most important people you can possibly talk about. The wisdom Abraham, the friend of God, had brought resolved the problem of our freedom and our fate. The key is mutual pervading. Keep in mind that God would be no maker did no world arise. God wouldn't be a creator if he didn't create the world. He really owes a lot to us. How could he be the creator God if he didn't make beings such as we are? Unique among the creatures, we, in guided thought, become aware of this. Then know that God, though great, may not apart from cosmos rightly be defined. Twin mirrors lauding, worshipping our world and skies. We're eyes, we are eyes, wherewith our God upon himself will gaze. Our lives determined, yes, but by the one with whom we share the deepest and the dearest being. We, regarded as repliers to divinity, by microcosmic yet reflected God, our days are free to shape as we, deific, that is God-making, light assume. It's very much like the teaching of the cup and the knot. Don't let yourself be tied down by anything, but see God everywhere and in everything.
So well presented. This is just a pleasure to have Martin Beck with us on the program, and I'm so grateful that he's taking the time to do the recitations, the presentations as we're going through these. What does the Quran add to the Abraham story, do you think?
Oh, let me tell you about the Abraham story, okay? It's wonderful that Abraham unifies and reformulates Sufi teaching so well, because it is a unifying kind of teaching. All three religions in the Judeo-Christo-Islamic tradition, by the way, very few people ever use this word, Judeo-Christo-Islamic, but I think it's important. Abraham had children, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. They all believe in God, and they all insist that Abraham was their father and taught them their religions. All three religions in the Judeo-Christo-Islamic tradition believe in God, and all of them further agree that their father in this belief is Abraham. Christianity may reframe in part the Abraham story of the question-raising sacrifice. The Quran, in turn, tells the Jewish traditional story, nowhere to be found in the Hebrew Bible, but a piece of Jewish folklore that is very well known, of Abraham smashing his father's idols, all except the largest. When his enraged father said, "Who did this?" Abraham replied, "That big guy over there, he smashed them all." Father says, "You know they can't do things like that." Abraham, "Exactly my point." Note the mutual illumination of a human being and God in the life of love is not always accomplished without a process of sudden challenge and struggle for insight. And now, what does the Quran add, especially to the Abraham story? Because the Quran took this Jewish story and made it central. Abraham's father is enraged at the smashing of the idols. But in the Quran, Abraham's father, this does not happen. You'll never get this in Jewish or in Christian tradition. In the Quran, Abraham's father is so infuriated, he orders that his son be burned alive. But God cools the flames, rescuing Abraham. And the intended victim of the vengeful wrath, get this, forgives his father. There may well be a Christian influence in the story of the forgiveness of apparent enemies. In any case, it promotes Abraham to the stature of a saint, and the entire history of Abraham in the three related religions is fascinating and amazing to contemplate. There are all kinds of passages in the Quran where God says things like, "There is one religion. I taught Moses the Torah. I taught Jesus, the gospel, and now, Muhammad, I teach you the Quran. There is one religion." Interesting, huh?
Well, it certainly is, and so much of what you're saying we've never heard before, and it's very enlightening, and so much knowledge that Martin is sharing with us. The third book that we're talking about, featuring on our interview today, is called Beauty in Islam. Why is that the title of the book, and what is the topic of the book?
I call it in subtitle, Poems of Wholeness, Light, and Concord, Responding to the Quran, to Scholars, to Legacies of Tradition. I tried to find out, you see, let's see, here's a quote. I think I can find it.
In all these books, yes. Again, you'll find at his website.
Just a moment, one moment.
And the website is martinbidney.org. Very simple. And we have these on our website. Amazon, the author page probably has all of these as well. But the best source is to go to see what Martin is working on, what he has available in the library there.
Well, anyway, so it says in the Quran that God's names are the most beautiful names. And there's quite a lot of talk about beauty in the Quran and in the memoir literature. It's part of Islamic tradition to talk about beauty. And so I tried to figure out maybe there's some kind of an Islamic tradition about defining beauty, but I couldn't find such a thing. Instead, I called my book Poems of Wholeness, Light, and Concord, because those are the three qualifying attributes of beauty that were set up by St. Thomas Aquinas, who is roughly, that's a medieval teacher, and he might have something to say. And all the three religions, if I'm right, are the three sons of three sons, if you like, or daughters of Abraham. They have kindred insights. So you can go from one to another. And perhaps you read Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man by James Joyce, there's a careful exposition of St. Thomas's theory of beauty. According to him, beautiful things have wholeness, completeness, fullness, integrity, wholeness. And then they have concord, harmony, consonantia, consonants. It's a harmony. And then lastly, brightness, power to illuminate. Okay, wholeness, light, and concord. I think those are central virtues of Islam as well. So I don't have a new theory of beauty, but I do have some poems where I apply St. Thomas's thought about beauty to various poems. And what I did in this book is I basically used it as an opportunity to do one of my all-time favorite hobbies. And that is to put down the Quran right in front of me and open up a random page and read it. And if I like what I read, I write a poem about it. And very often, since I'm a poet, what I read is what I like among the things I read are the most beautiful things. So here, let me just give you an example. This is poem number 42. I call it Lyrical Response to Verses in Surah 25 called The Criterion. A surah is a chapter or a canto. Hast thou not seen how thy Lord hath spread the shade? And if he willed, he could have made it still. And then we have made the sun its pilot. Then we withdraw it unto us, a gradual withdrawal. And he it is, God, who maketh night a covering for you, and sleep repose, and maketh day a resurrection. And he it is who sendeth the winds, glad tidings heralding his mercy. And we send down purifying water from the sky, that we may give life thereby to a dead land. And we give many beasts and men that we have created to drink thereof. Well, I read that and I thought, oh, I've got to write this up. So here I go. All right.
Yes.
The spreading of the shadow long upon the lawn, when slowly guided by the rising of the sun, The pilot of the changing of the shade, who won the height and then subsided, heaven light withdrawn. We think of this and then recall the robe of night, wherein we all, enwrapped in tranquil thankfulness, repose in preparation. Day will come to bless with dawn our resurrection swathed in morning light. We know that it is he who, by a vivid wind, with mind transforming, soil and forest warming twinned, and fortified by water falling from the sky, arousing woken field and mead, will glad the eye, in earth new clad in flowers, and to utter words he taught King Solomon, inspire the breath of birds.
I am fascinated by the cover of Beauty in Islam. Can you tell me what that is?
It will be a great joy to do that. Here's the cover.
Yes.
It was. This is a revolutionary idea in the history of Islamic art. My friend made it. He's a world-class calligrapher. And you know what these are? They are the 99 names of God in stained glass windows.
Ah, okay. That was capturing my attention. I can see the video of the book covers that were rotating for the YouTube video, and that was a question, and it's like I now got the answer what that is and the story behind that. That's the book cover on
Beauty in Islam.
Beauty in Islam, which again is available. How may God's Book of Judgment be interpreted by today's poet, do you think?
Oh, well, I wrote a poem about that. I like to write about little things that I find in the Quran that make me think. They puzzle me. They don't necessarily inspire me with a sense of, oh, here's ultimate truth, but rather, here's an interesting problem to think about. And here is a response in poem 55 to a verse that I found in Surah 35 called The Angels. And this is from verse 11. And no one groweth old who groweth old, nor is aught lessened of his life, but it is recorded in a book. Lo, that is easy for Allah. A lot of people think that, you know, in Jewish tradition, there's a sort of book which is opened up on New Year's, and then on Day of Atonement, it's closed, and you have about a week's time or 10 days' time to repent and before decrees are finalized for the coming year. Lots of people have come up with this idea of a book. I can't believe in it myself. It sounds like something human beings might invent, not a god, but I wanted to think about it, and I put my thoughts in a poem, okay? And no one groweth old who groweth old, nor aught is lessened of his life except it be recorded in a book. For Allah easy this. By that am I not frightened? Rather bold, I would not e'en despair that what inept and ill-advised too swift I took to be the road to bliss, in foolish youth is truly shown and told and inerasable. I yet have leapt with joy that I, a boy, forsook what mad I did amiss. Our memory I find a gift of gold. Within the helpful record that is kept, I'll hope to see, if I may look, not sin, but synthesis. In other words, I'm thinking, you know, I don't have to wait for God to write a book about my life. I'm writing it up in poems. I'm conducting my spiritual education in public, and it's on record.
Not only do I enjoy the readings, but the interpretation as well. It helps us as we listen and we see where the poet is going, and we get this from an expert. And I sincerely appreciate Martin being back with us on the program. Where in the Quran is it suggested that Prophet Muhammad imagine himself as a poet?
Oh, that's a lot of fun. I look for things like this, and I happily found one and wrote it up in poem 73. It's called Lyrical Response to Verses from Surah 52, The Mount. Therefore warn men, O Muhammad, by the grace of Allah, thou art neither soothsayer nor madman, or say they, He is a poet, one for whom we may expect the accident of time. You know, poetry, it's popular for a while and sinks into oblivion, perhaps. Say unto them, expect your fill, though I am with you among the expectant. God is putting me, or Muhammad is making out that he is, he imagines that God is saying to him, if people call you a poet, that's not such a terribly bad thing to be, because, you know, the book that I wrote about Ibn Arabi is called God the All-Imaginer. God, according to Ibn Arabi, imagined the world into being. He is therefore the primal poet. In fact, to Ibn Arabi, God, the only reason the world exists is that God was a lonesome lover, and he was positively desperate for something to love, and he gave a cosmic scale sigh of desperation and despair, and guess what? That sigh was poetical, was poetically creative to the extent that it generated the pluriverse, of which every part is a metaphor of the God that made it. Also, in the Islamic mystical Sufi tradition, the 99 names of God are only the names of him, of his attributes. There's rubrics as he, the rubrics of his qualities as they are manifest in the creative world, created world of God himself, the ultimate. We can only say that that is the unnameable. So here we go. Here's my poem. Need practicers of crafted rhyme await the accident of time, who never proudly claim to tell what is to come, nor rant in fell, that means cruel, and gin-like raving unrestrained, may rather just reward have gained. Calamity can they expect who style themselves the wise elect? For light will shine in lowly place on them who wait for holy grace. Nor think they mighty are and great and destined for a high estate. Expectant are we all of death, whoever drew a human breath. Nor him appalls the closing day who was created, truth to say, which can the soul a body give that on the page in awe may live. Expectancy is but the start of breathing for the spirit art, the giving and instilling will that spice-like with the air fulfill. From twice a minus, make a plus. Be merry, temerarious. No melody, the world will see, can ever end for those like me that Eden's holy river seek. Rhyme, rhythm, both mean flow in Greek. Who music of the word deny may in the desert thirsting lie. The song of him that lived within the wild and shed the shroud of sin turned every thistle to a fruit. Life, wisdom, by a single root united bloom on Eden tree. High luminant, let music be.
Boy, it's. I'm looking at the clock, and unfortunately, we're out of time. And there, I just enjoy these so much. I'm going to put you on the spot now. Do you have an encore that you could do for us? One more before we say goodbye for the day. Is there something we can bring you back to read for us?
Yeah, sure.
And while you're doing that, I will go ahead and say our guest on the program, Martin Bidney, B-I-D-N-E-Y. His website is martinbidney.org, B-I-D-N-E-Y, Bidney. You'll find all of the books there, including the three that we feature today, West, East, Divine, God, the All-Imaginer, and Beauty in Islam. All those are there and so many more on the website. And it's always a pleasure to have him back. As you're looking there, what are you working on now? You are just so active and out there and touching so many lives with what you're doing with your work. What are you working on now?
Well, I'm doing something that I just call epiphanies of my daily life, and I write up all kinds of things. For example, I describe performances that I saw on the internet, or I translate from a poet who is not well known at all. I'm translating about 75 or 80 of his poems, and then writing replies to them, trying to promote him into one of the giants of world literature, which I think he ought to be called. Okay, is that enough? Now I'll give you a poem. I just happened to come upon this, and it's very amusing. Goethe, in his dealings with Islam, conducts these dealings with the help of a pub poet, as I told you, and this means that not everything he says is particularly pious. Listen to this. This is a poem number 197 from his West East Divan. Is the Quran from eternity? That I will not ask. Might the Quran created be? No answer, a thankless task. But that it the book of books need be, my Muslim faith made clear to me. That wine is from eternity, this I question not. That it might a pre-angel creation be, may also well be taught. The drinker, whatever the case may be, looks God in the face, the freer he.
Thank you so much for reading that and humoring me with the encore. We had to have one more before we ended our conversation today. Martin, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us. Hopefully we can do this again and again and again. It's been such a pleasure to have you with us on the program. Thank you, sir, for being with us. All the best, and looking forward to our next conversation.
Same here. Thank you, Rick.
You're welcome. Martin Bidney, B-I-D-N-E-Y, Amazon.com, of course, all the usual places for the books. I would suggest going to his website, martinbidney.org, and there you'll find all of the books that we're talking about, all the latest information and what he is working on. And I'd like to thank Galley Brokers for arranging, once again, a conversation with Martin today, leveraging expertise to drive success. We make your literary ambitions into reality. And remember to follow This Week in America on 28 podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, Odyssey, Audible, TuneIn, Google. Of course, you'll find us on YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, and many others. And don't forget, while you're there, to like, to comment, and to subscribe for more inspiring conversations.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.